This program is brought to you by the Brooklyn Brew Shop and Farm Steady, helping you make your favorite food and beverages at home using real ingredients. Learn more at brooklynbrewshop.com and farmsteady.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, you're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu, and on the line is my co-host in Hong Kong, Iris Van Kerkhove.
Good morning from Hong Kong.
We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, Iris and I dig deep on an Asian dish. We trace its history, how it traveled to the West, and we interview experts on the topic.
So, Linda, we don't usually talk about news on Feast Meets West, but since we're in media and we love talking about Asian food, I just wanted to quickly address that. Have you heard the news about Lucky Peach?
Actually, you just brought it to my attention a couple of days ago. I can't believe that happened.
Yeah, so basically, you know, one of our favorite publications will be ending. It will be having their last issue soon, I guess.
Yeah, it's like quite...
I believe the website will still be up, but, you know, it was a beautiful magazine, and it's really a shame that they're shutting it down.
Yeah, it's quite the indie magazine. I think it's kind of like the written format of, like, Mind of a Chef, where they really go into the long form of, like, particular topics, similarly, like, what we do, I think. So I think it, like, means a lot to us, that kind of, like, not just post an Instagram, like, photo about something and move on, but, like, really dig deep.
Right, exactly. So shout out to Lucky Peach. You will be missed. But anyway, back to today's topic. I'm excited about today's topic because, well, not only because I love consuming it, but because we actually covered this topic in what feels like ages ago on our first official episode of Feast Meets West. This was before we even joined Heritage Radio Network. And that topic is, of course, matcha.
Yeah, it's super cool that we get to revisit this topic because we've really only scratched the surface. While we covered the culinary side of matcha in that first episode and we briefly touched on the health benefits, today we have a fitness and matcha expert on the show with us. In the studio with us today is Stephen Chuk. Stephen is a very successful trainer here in New York City. He's founded AS10 Training in Tribeca, and he's trained numerous athletes and celebrities. He's also the co-founder of House of Matcha, a matcha brand he launched with a couple of his friends. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, Iris.
So, I'm definitely a believer in the mental benefits of matcha, and while I still enjoy coffee sometimes, I definitely feel that matcha has a much more calming effect than coffee, which sometimes makes me feel a little jittery. Plus, it's easier on my stomach, too. So, Linda, you want to take a wild guess as to what I'm drinking this morning?
Your matcha almond latte?
Yeah, exactly. It's my poor man's matcha latte, but I actually much prefer it to some other matcha lattes that you get out there. But it's just basically almond milk, a little bit of honey, and I just blend it in a blender with some matcha.
Yeah, and the recipe's up on our website, too, feastmeetswest.com, so check it out.
Yes.
So, Iris, before we talk to Stephen, let's define matcha for our listeners. What is matcha?
Sure. So matcha is a type of green tea from Japan. I want to backtrack a bit and define green tea first. It's the term everyone knows and has this reputation as being the quote-unquote healthy tea. Unlike oolong and black tea, green tea doesn't undergo the same withering and oxidation when processing, but I'm a believer that all tea has health benefits, so people shouldn't be afraid to give white or black tea some love too. But back to matcha. Matcha is a finely ground type of green tea, so unlike most teas you buy that looks like little dried leaves, matcha is a powder. Good matcha has really complex flavors. It's a little more bitter than other green teas, but has a hint of sweetness. It's also umami and has this sort of vegetal or seaweed flavor. It's traditionally whisked into hot water and consumed pretty much as is, with maybe a traditional Japanese sweet on the side. It's also used in the famous Japanese tea ceremony, which is a ceremonial preparation and presentation of matcha.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, like, traditional aspect. What's the history behind matcha?
Sure. So green tea originated in China in the Tang Dynasty. The tea leaves were steamed and formed into tea bricks for storage and trade. The tea was prepared by roasting and pulverizing the tea and then boiling that tea powder in hot water and adding salt. Then in the Song Dynasty, they prepared the beverage by whipping the tea powder and hot water together in a bowl. And that was like sort of the popular method of making tea. So while this preparation and style of tea completely fell out of fashion in ancient China, it was brought over to Japan, and the process and the tea was refined and perfected, which, side note, is kind of a recurring theme we see with pretty much everything that goes to Japan. So props to Japan for that. But both Zen Buddhism and the Chinese methods of preparing powdered tea were brought to Japan in, I think, 1191 by the monk Eisai. It continued to be an important part of life at Zen monasteries because of its calming effect and mental benefits for focus. And then in later centuries, it became a beverage consumed by high society and shoguns.
Got it. So all of that happened, you know, in the East. How did it make it to the West?
So in our first episode of Feast Meets West, we discussed our theories on this, and basically we boiled it down to three factors. So first, there was green tea ice cream. It probably existed in some form or another before this, but it wasn't really merchandised or popular until the 1990s. And green tea ice cream is, of course, made with matcha and was probably a lot of Americans' first exposure to matcha, even if they weren't aware of it. So then matcha lattes happened. Starbucks introduced green tea lattes and other matcha-flavored drinks after matcha became successful in their Japanese store locations, and they, you know, brought it over to the States and other countries. And this trend, of course, spread to other cafes and chains. And while a lot of these matcha lattes don't use good or even real matcha in some cases, nor do they really taste like matcha, but they're popular and they're popular because it's a coffee alternative. And the final factor is the health craze, which is the more recent trend. The health benefits of matcha has been mentioned more and more in the media, and Americans are becoming more aware that it's a health drink. So this attracted a whole set of other people to matcha. And, you know, of course, Stephen can talk more about this. But I think it's really funny. It all kind of came full circle with matcha. It's huge all over the world, especially in Asia. You can find matcha-flavored everything now. And it's one of my favorite food histories because it's funny to think that this beverage is popular in China once again after it had started there. So many centuries later as a Japanese import, and has traveled and transformed so much in between the Tang Dynasty and now.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It reminds me of the guys we interviewed in our first episode, Matcha Bar, how they're, you know, Americans that fell in love with this drink because it solved, like, the jittery problem that they had from, like, drinking coffee. And then they reinvented it for the masses. Like, they put, like, lemon juice, watermelon juice, and mix it with their matcha. And then now they do pop-ups in Japan, you know, bringing this Western on-the-go style back to its roots. And that's, like, really popular, and they have, like, lines out the door.
Yeah, so it's just so cool to see that different cultures are influencing each other, and, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
And it continues to grow and develop.
Yeah, yeah. And another point I want to bring up is, like, social media. The fact that it is a pretty green color. It's, like, you know, very, like, hashtag trending. you know, that definitely adds to it. And, you know, Instagram as a platform didn't exist 10 years ago.
Yeah, for sure.
So, to tell us more about matcha, we have Steven here in the studio with us. But Steven, first, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Okay, so I've lived in New York for 8 years, originally from Australia. I'm a total fitness, health, like, enthusiast. I have a gym called S10 Training, and I have a matcha brand, and I'm a total foodie as well.
Amazing. So much in common except for, like, the fitness part. could you tell us about your personal experience with matcha and how you got into it?
My first experience with matcha is maybe 10 years ago. I flew to Japan and I saw on the TV screen, like, green tea adverts, and I was talking about green tea being, like, the elixir of life. And then when I came back to New York, I was obsessed with green tea. I was like, I want to get tea that's, like, that green color.
Mm-hmm. Did you try it in Japan while you were there?
I did.
Okay.
And I bought all these different types of teas, and I thought it was maybe I was boiling it too much because it always ended up brown. Mm-hmm. And then one of my friends was like, you're buying the wrong tea. Like, you need to buy matcha. And he sent me over some matcha. And that's my first experience with it. And that was probably 10 years ago. And then it became really mainstream.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So even at the time, you didn't realize that, like, matcha was different from, like, other types of green tea?
No.
Yeah.
I just thought it was, like, the way I was burning the tea, or maybe I was, like, cooking it wrong.
Yeah, and so did you realize it had the health benefits immediately? Like, when did that come into play?
Well, I always research everything, so, I mean, yeah, it's got amazing health benefits.
Yeah, and what are some of those?
I mean, it's all got to come down with the quality of the actual matcha. So the way matcha is grown, it's grown under shades. So if you actually go to the tea farms, like, all tea comes from the same leaves.
Mm.
But then you'll see, like, where they're growing the matcha, there's shade cloth over it. So they pick the leaf when it's, like, really young and really green. And then they steam it and they grind it. So the greener it is, the more vibrant it is, the more chlorophyll it has, the more antioxidant it has. It's got, like, really good health benefits. It's got, like, L-thionine, which is, like, an amino acid that's very calming. The chlorophyll helps with your liver. It's got a very slow-release caffeine, so you don't get that jittery. It's very sort of clean, like, clean energy. So, I mean, I don't drink coffee anymore, so I have matcha in the morning. And I just have energy throughout the whole day. Like, before, I would always have a coffee at 7 in the morning, then I would crash by 11 in the morning, then need another coffee, and then crash.
Yeah, yeah. So how often do you drink matcha throughout the day? Like, what is your matcha ritual like?
So I always get up in the morning. I always try and have that moment of zen. So I make a matcha in the morning. I do it the traditional way. I use the whisk. Something very calming about it. And then I try and sit, have, like, 5 minutes of silence and just drink my matcha before I start my day. But I do that every morning.
Do you drink some more, like, matcha later in the day?
No, I just have one in the morning.
I love that you take 5 minutes of silence with it, and just, I love that ritual. Must give you, like, a really great start to the day.
It does, because my days are so hectic. I just need that 5 minutes of calm in the morning.
Is it part of the, like, meditation?
Kind of.
Yeah. So would you say matcha is suitable for everyone? Do you recommend it to everyone? Do you recommend it to your clients?
Yeah, I recommend it to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's healthy. It's a better alternative to coffee. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and for those that are new to matcha, how would you say they should get started in matcha? Like, how do they start reaping the benefits?
I mean, always try it first. I have a lot of people that say they don't like it because they've tried it and it's very bitter.
Yeah, the taste is very chalky. Vegetal.
But that's got to do with the quality. Mm-hmm. So, like, bad quality matcha has that bitterness, it has that chalkiness. So everything from, like, the way you open the canister, the color of the powder, the way it mixes, all that has to do with, like, quality.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people that have said that they don't like it, we've given them, like, our matcha, and they're like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so smooth, it's nice.
Yeah, and what would you say, like, good matcha tastes like? What do you look out for? What should people look out for?
It has a very smooth texture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bitter, and it mixes very well. And even just looking at the powder before you mix it, the powder has to be, like, very green and vibrant because, it's mm-hmm. like I said, it's from the baby green leaves. So a lot of people use, like, old leaves. Mm-hmm. And then when you open the matcha, it's, like, a beige color or it's, like, a off-green.
Mm-hmm. That's, like, a pretty obvious indicator.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And is there anything negative about matcha? Is there such a thing as too much matcha?
I mean, moderation is key with everything. I'm sure there is too much.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people, if they have it on an empty stomach, it disagrees with them.
Mm.
I'm okay, but I suggest if it does, have food first.
Right. Common sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then how does it compare to other energy supplements?
Well, it's natural. I'm not a big fan of energy supplements because it, like, eventually burn out and it causes adrenal fatigue. So matcha is, it's like a sustained energy, so you don't really get that crash,
mm-hmm.
and it's clean energy.
Yeah. And from your perspective, just curious, are there other nutritional foods on your radar that, you know, have this kind of trending quality like matcha does and the actual health benefits?
I mean, health and wellness is so big now, so mm-hmm. basically anything that is going to give those sort of health benefits, I could see being trending.
Yeah.
So stuff like that I implement, like I've been doing bone broth for like ever, and now it's like trending.
Wait, what is that?
Like bone broth.
Oh, bone broth.
Like turmeric is like
mm-hmm.
is like big. I'm a big fan of like chlorella and spirulina, so all like the algaes.
Oh, okay.
Like I recently just had blood work done and hair work done,
okay.
and I had traces of metals, so like mercury, heavy metals.
Oh, wow.
And so chlorella is like one of the things that helps pull those things out.
Mm-hmm.
It's big in Japan because of all the radiation.
Oh, got it.
So
got it.
It's like very big.
Oh, that's interesting. Iris, take note. We have to do an episode on this.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to take a really quick break and we'll be right back.
This program is brought to you by the Brooklyn Brew Shop and Farm Steady, helping you make your favorite food and beverages at home using real ingredients. Founders Erica and Steven started the Brooklyn Brew Shop in the summer of 2009 to get space-strapped New Yorkers brewing. They believe that making real beer from real ingredients can be simple, tasty, and most important, fun. Their beer-making kits are designed especially for stovetop brewing, with ingredient mixes for seasonally inspired beers. They didn't stop there. Now, with their new line of Farmsteady DIY kits, you can make your own cheese, bagels, and pretzels right at home. So much of what tastes great doesn't need a lot of equipment, space, or even a ton of practice. With high-quality ingredients and basic knowledge, the possibilities for what you can make from scratch are nearly endless. Through Brooklyn Brew Shop and Farm Steady, Erica and Steven want to help you understand what it is you're eating, how it's grown, how it's cooked, and how you can truly make it your own. Learn more at brooklynbrewshop.com and farmsteady.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. Today in the studio with us, we have Steven Chuk. So, Steven, you are the co-founder of House of Matcha.
Yes,
tell us
correct.
About that and, like, the philosophy behind it.
So, House of Matcha started with, like, three friends and our passion for matcha.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're not, like, all from fitness, are they?
No. One has, like, restaurants. and then one is actually has a tech background.
Mm-hmm.
So we traveled to Japan and we spent like a month there, and then we basically visited every farm until we found what we considered the best matcha, which is how House of Matcha started.
And where is that farm? Like, where?
It's in Uji, Kyoto.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit. So the farm we found, the guy is 13th generation tea grower.
Oh, wow.
He is the only person in the whole history of Japan to get a perfect score for tea grading. He's like an older man, like in his 60s. He's never had garlic, alcohol, spicy food. He's never wanted to like ruin his palate. Mm-hmm. So he's a total purist.
Wow.
And a total perfectionist. But we tried every farm, and then as soon as we went and saw him, it was just above and beyond everything else we tried.
Got it. That sounds amazing. And how do you differentiate your matcha? Because, I mean, there's so many brands out there, and we live in New York City where it's, like, quite competitive.
Definitely quality. We didn't cut any corners. And then just partnerships. So we sell it at Soho House. We have it at Jack's Wife Frida, like Kinfolk. We try and partner with like cool sort of trendy places.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like the demographic we're trying to hit.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And are you seeing success with that? Like year over year, like more matcha converts and
definitely,
whatnot?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. We even have it in Hong Kong. We have it at the WOW store.
If Iris ever wants to know.
I was just thinking,
like, where can I get House of Matcha?
Yeah, where can listeners buy House of Matcha?
So if you actually, you can buy it online, or if you want to buy it, we have it at a regular visitor store in Brooklyn. We have it at Kinfolk store. But if you want to drink it as a beverage, we have it at all the Bluestone coffee shops, all 13 of them.
Oh, nice.
We have it at Jack's Wife Frida, who I think actually make the best matcha latte. We have it at like Indie Fresh, Chelsea Market. We have it at Soho House. We have like a lot of vendors.
Mm-hmm. Super cool. So do you feel like matcha is certainly gaining popularity in New York City and across the US?
I think everything copies New York. Like New York starts trends. And as time goes on, you can see matcha on like basically every cafe almost has it on their menu. It's definitely going more mainstream.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it'll take over the status of like, you know, coffee standard teas at some point? Or
I don't think it's going to take over coffee, but I think it's surpassing standard tea as we go on.
Yeah,
because it's so versatile as well. Because you can cook with it. Yeah, it's very versatile.
Yeah, and what do you think? You know. We've talked about, like, health benefits. We talked about its versatility and also, like, its good looks. What do you think is the, like, magical mix to why it's had a surge in popularity?
I think it's, like, a combination of that. So, like, the health benefits. Like, everybody emulates what happens in New York. So you can already see it trickling into places like Hong Kong, Australia. We're talking with cafes in New Zealand right now.
Oh, really?
They don't have it, and they're about to start doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Europe is pretty big there now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's growing.
Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What is something about matcha that you wish everyone knew about?
I wish everybody knew how to tell the difference between good and bad matcha, which I touched over a few of them, so... Like the color, the taste, even just like packaging. Because matcha goes off after like 3 months.
Oh, okay.
So like if you buy it in a tin, you got to make sure that tin is like really good quality and it's airlocked. So things as basic as that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw out a point about that. I once said that sometimes if you go to health food stores, you're more likely to get good matcha, but I also realized that's not true because I bought some at a health food store and it said it was ceremonial grade and it said it was organic, And I already was suspicious because it had a sort of lighter green color. Like, it wasn't the vibrant green color you were talking about, Stephen. And when I tried it, it was just like, it was like night and day. I couldn't even finish the pack. I threw it out. It was so bad.
I mean,
you do have to be careful.
Ceremonial grade, like that whole name, it's like a Western name that came up. So if you go to Japan, they actually grade the tea from 1 to 10.
Okay.
There is no such thing as ceremonial tea, because all matcha is ceremonial tea.
So that term actually doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything in Japan. And nobody sells the top grade. Like, we don't even sell the top grade, because it's so expensive. And in terms of organic, so, like, organic... Like, we wanted to bring in organic, but so organic in Japan, they allow 22 pesticides in Japan, and that's considered organic. In US, they allow 8. Australia, they allow 5. So what's considered organic in Japan is not organic in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you like kind
with
of
that as well?
Do you kind of just not, you know, fuss with that kind of labeling?
No, we don't.
Yeah. And curious, so in Japan, what do people typically buy? Like, do they look for the specific number of a grade?
When we went to Kyoto in Japan, a lot of Japanese people don't actually like matcha. Which is pretty funny.
Okay, explain.
it's kind of like a dessert tea, like they have it at the end of the dinner. And they're not like a big fan. Like Gaikura, which is like a green, like a very light green tea, that's normally the favorite tea in Japan. It's one of my favorite teas as well.
Mm-hmm.
But funny enough, matcha is not what we found when we went there. It wasn't very popular.
Oh, okay. They haven't caught on to the health benefits, or they're just not partial to the taste.
I guess they've had it for like 800 years.
Oh, that's a good point. So it's almost as if it's trending more in New York than...
Definitely.
Yeah. Interesting. So what do you see for the future of matcha here in New York and also globally?
It's definitely going to expand. I mean, there's more, like I said, every cafe has, like, matcha options. Even in terms of our business, like, we're seeing more cafes wanting to wholesale.
Mm-hmm. It's making it easier for you.
Yeah, totally. And there's places all around the world that are starting to to catch on. Like I said, everybody basically emulates what happens in New York in terms of trends.
Yep. Awesome. And so what's next for, like, you personally? I know we've talked about, you know, House of Matcha. You also run your fitness studio. So what do you have going on?
So I'm about to start a new venture, and I'm basically going to encompass the fitness and the matcha all in one.
Oh, okay.
So I'm in the process of starting up a recovery center. In New York, so there'll be like a matcha bar, there'll be like a proper juice bar.
Mm-hmm.
We're working with this company called Thorn, which make like the best supplements. They're going to put a doctor in there to do blood draws.
Oh, wow.
We're going to have like magnesium baths, we're going to have everything.
That sounds amazing. And when is that slated to?
I'm trying to sign a lease now, so hopefully very soon.
Amazing, amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show, Stephen.
You're welcome. It's amazing.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. It was really cool to hear about matcha.
Yep. and that wraps up today's episode. So, listeners, please check out House of Matcha. And if you haven't tried matcha, give it a go and let us know how you like it. If you're a matcha fan already, let us know how you got into it and if you experienced any of these health or mental benefits we talked about today. Drop us a line on our online community on Facebook or Instagram. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do show us some love by leaving us a rating and review on iTunes. And we'll be back next week with more awesome conversations from the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.